Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
And now joining us for the interview, we have Anne Penn. Thank you for being here, Anne.
Thank you for having me.
So, Anne, before we get into your book, which we were talking about before the break, how did you get into writing and about these sort of stories, these true crime and killer stories out there?
Well, it certainly wasn't something I actually had thought I would ever write about, because this was a story that was kind of too scary for me, because of the East Area Rapist who had come to Sacramento in 76, apparently. At least that's what the story is told. And I lived there and grew up there. I was born at Mayfair Air Force Base and was there at 19 to 21 when he was attacking all over Sacramento. I worked downtown, and so it was a really scary time. And so that was one of the things that was, you know, terrifying as a young woman. And then a couple years later, there was a family connection that I had where two of the murder victims were my grandfather's son and his daughter-in-law. So it was sort of one of those things that I kept sort of in the back of my mind sealed off for years and years, because it was, I had some post-traumatic stress over how horrific that particular story was, and was always afraid of sliding glass doors and just all the stuff that happened when East Area Rapist was terrorizing Sacramento. And I was fortunate not to be harmed then, but he hit about a minute away from my apartment off of Piedmont and Seamus, which was one of the last attacks before he was supposed to have left Sacramento. So that, in a nutshell, is how the stories were sort of tucked away in my own fear. And I wanted to address that fear and also to try to help maybe discover who did this in Sacramento, because they had finally tied them together. And since I grew up in Sacramento, I started asking people I went to high school with. I said, did you know him? Does he sound like somebody you know? And that kind of thing. So it just sort of happened, and I was writing a different book completely, and I thought, I need to address this. I'm not getting any younger. I need to stop letting fear get in my way.
Well, yeah, you must be approaching 30 by now, right? Or
oh, at least, yeah.
So now the new book, or the newest book, I believe, What If? And it's the story of possibilities during his reign of terror, the true story behind the 58-year hunt for the man with the most monikers. So how did you get involved with Zodiac now from Golden State Killer?
Well, once again, it's one of those things that just, it's where the story led. And I was probably more surprised than some people that I ended up where I ended up. The intent originally, you know, it's interesting, as I wrote a book that I got out last year because people kept asking me, well, what do we know about the Golden State Killer? What's, you know, going on with that? And so on. And so I sent out a book last year called The Creep Among Us because I had known he was in Sacramento and predicted that's where we would find him in my first book. And I had profiled him myself and studied him and, you know, worked with Larry Crompton on, you know, different things and, you know, met with him. And so, long story short, I ended up with these two books out there. First, I was trying to help find him and honor the victims. And then also, the second one was just to sort of inform people, you know, that what other murders might he have committed, you know, what's going on. So the third one was sort of like people kept coming to me saying, well, you know, why don't you write about what we're finding? And I was also still, of course, investigating myself because I am a very curious person. So I checked into what other murders that might have occurred, just like a lot of sleuths have over time. There's a lot of people who have thought, you know, there were Placer County, which is in the area that he was a cop, Sacramento County, and just different areas around where he had been the Easter egg rapist and also where he lived for 30 years in the attack zones. And so we kept checking, and that's what my main focus was at the time I began this particular book, was just to see, could we tie him to other murders? Are there other, you know, victims' families out there that would be happy with finding answers at this late date? And so that was really how this book started. And as you follow the evidence and you follow the patterns, you follow, you know, different things that occurred, you go back in time because this is a guy who started as a teenager. Well, when was he a teenager? He was 15 in 1960. He was 18 in 1963. And as you follow the trail, it's sort of like, oh, my God, this is worse than I expected. So that's how this happened.
So now with the Golden State Killer, you believe that they've got the right guy for that, right?
I do. 100% DNA match. You know, I always say alleged because you have to. He hasn't been convicted in a court of law. But 100% DNA match, you know, with all the different crime scenes that he left his DNA, you know, 13 murders, it doesn't give you much room to wiggle out of it.
Oh, now So now I'm a complete amateur when it comes to this, as far as Zodiac and Golden State Killer and things like that. I've had a few interviews with people and touched off and stuff, but I'm more just the interviewer. So, but the first thing that I think of with the Golden State Killer was that they did catch him through DNA. You know, the whole system that they worked out. Now, so with that DNA, were they able to find a DNA match for the Zodiac murders to match D'Angelo as well?
No.
No.
From every report I've heard, they attempted to, and they were not able to get a good enough DNA profile or sample profile, anything to be able to rule him in or out. I kept waiting for that to occur because back in 2014-15, one of the first things I did was look at the Zodiac as possibly being the Easter egg rapist Golden State Killer just because of the geography involved and the fact that he seemed like he was military and or could be a police person. And I looked at it briefly, not very in-depth really at the time, because I thought I really want to get on this Easter egg rapist stuff and try to figure out who he is. And when I read about some of the things that the Zodiac, you know, like the most dangerous game, I read the book and I checked into them and I thought, I was hoping, this is why I discarded the idea early on, is because I was hoping that the man who was the Golden State Killer, as they renamed him, was younger. I was hoping he was younger because I wanted, if they found him, for him to be punished longer. And also, I just thought he was the Zodiac had to have been, he would have been somebody that was too young to be the same guy. I was off by about 5 to 8 years in my estimation. So I dropped that and went after investigating, you know, full time into Easter rape, original Night Stalker is what we called them then. So I got back to it just because of the evidence.
Yeah. Okay. So then let's talk about that. What was the first thing that drew you back to D'Angelo and the Zodiac? Because at first you were saying no, you looked at it and said no, and so you went back to it. So what do you think?
Well, what occurred was in investigating and seeing what kinds of things this person was doing, and again, this is stuff that so many years later you cannot prove that somebody was the person who poisoned dogs. You cannot prove that he was the burglar who broke in everywhere. But what you can see are patterns of behavior geographically, chronologically, and you can see whenever there were dog poisonings and killings and that kind of thing, there were also burglaries. And so you could see these clustered attacks, and then someone would hit there and move on to someplace else, and you'd see the same thing happen in another geographical area where they killed dogs and they did the recon and then they did their burglaries and they went on from there. And there were also other crimes occurring at the same time, like peeping and prowling and, you know, just sort of malicious mischief stuff even. You know, and even trying to kill a police son's dog and different things like that. Just games that this person was playing. And you can see patterns over time and also in each geographical area that were ties to, or possible ties or connections to D'Angelo. So you can see it. And you know, like I said, if you look at it over time, which is, you know, a lot of what I put in the book, he began doing that and sort of was able to morph from the beginning to the end into whatever he felt like. You know, this is a guy who really liked to screw with the cops. He liked to play games, and he did that very well.
Now, do we know if D'Angelo lived in San Francisco or closer to that area?
Well, there are ties to his father was stationed at Hamilton Air Force Base, and he knew in Van Nuys and Vallejo in that area, the Presidio, San Francisco. So he could have gone in that direction with his own family member. Certainly, if he lived in Auburn or in the Sacramento area, he went to Folsom High School. He had to have traveled around California and Northern California. And the geography is one of the things that I think is most important in proving where he was and how he did what he did.
Okay. So now, what do you think is the most compelling thing or the thing that convinced you about D'Angelo?
Well, one, you know, with the connections, as you go back and back and back, and you find out, you know, different things about the Zodiac and then pre-Zodiac activity, what was interesting to me, and this is what's happened with a lot of the people who look at Zodiac, and then there's other people who look at Golden State Killer, and they look at them as completely separate, which we all did, really, for a million years. We didn't know who the Golden State Killer was. So you look at them separately, and that's what we continued to do, never really linking them. And then pretty soon, with enough evidence, you go, oh, my God, is this the same guy? And it was the same thought that not only I had, but a lot of people had, because the geography really does tell a lot about where this guy came from and where he went. And, again, his travels, he liked to drive and hit places and drive some more and hit again. There are instances where he would, on the same day, within a 12-hour period, go from one place and hit and then go somewhere else and hit. So, you know, it was not unusual to think that a 2 or 3 hour drive would, you know, deter him. So if you go all the way back to 1963, where you see the murders of Robert Domingos and Linda Edwards down on Gaviota Beach, you know, and then they think later on, years later, gee, they might be tied to the Zodiac. He might be pre-Zodiac activity. And there's just all this evidence that you find. And then there's other murders that happen after that. And there are couples each time. The similarity is D'Angelo was killing couples over time as well, and that was his objective. So there's just a lot of similarities in the two as far as their motives, as far as what they did geography-wise. I can connect him to Santa Maria at that same time in 1963. So there's a lot of evidence that actually connects him to an area like Riverside, California, Whittier. It just goes on. So...
So when you say connects him, what exactly do you mean? Like he was there, you got some sort of papers to show that he was there? Or?
Correct. That he had relatives in each area geographically, that he was able to do what he did and have a place to go. And if he decided to leave an area, like for instance, a lot of the murders that happened on the beach, 1963-64, all of a sudden stopped. Why? Because he went in the Navy. So you can fit the timelines easily, and I have yet to find any kind of an opportunity where he wasn't available. In other words, a lot of people go, well, he couldn't have killed Cherry Joe Bates because he was on a ship. Well, he was docked. He wasn't out to sea. He was docked, and he was not on the roster that shows the Canberra left. So... there's a lot of things that is like, oh, well, wait a minute. He really was available for that. So that if that's pre-Zodiac and if that's him, he was available for that murder as well, and he has connections to Riverside.
So you believe that D'Angelo may be the suspect in the Bates case in Riverside?
I believe that if he is also the Zodiac, that yes.
Because I was going to ask, there's DNA in the Bates case that can be tested. They have some DNA from hairs that were found in her hand, and that was apparently used about, I don't know, 20 years ago to exclude a suspect that they've had for years, or at least the DNA didn't match. So it is possible that they could check that DNA against D'Angelo's DNA.
You would hope, yeah. And I kept waiting in the back of my mind for the last year, plus, you know, when they arrested D'Angelo, I kept thinking, well, sooner or later, they're going to either rule him in or rule him out. I was kind of waiting for an announcement of some sort. Meanwhile, I was still looking into what murders he may have committed in Placer County and around this area, you know, to see what I could see and what the patterns might be. And once again, the MO that this guy had, everybody goes, oh, they're whole different, totally different characters. They're totally different MOs. But here's the thing. Joseph D'Angelo is probably the most at ease of anybody I've ever seen. And I've studied serial killers since 1980 and, you know, all the different ones, Gacy and the Green River Killer and on and on. I started with Ted Bundy. But what you do is, with this particular one, with D'Angelo and what he did, and because he was smart enough to outsmart everybody, really, for a very long time, and he had a criminal justice degree, and he was a cop, he had studied how to be a better criminal. So what he did was change his MO whenever he wanted to, and I always say that his MO was fluid and moved back and forth, and that's because he really wasn't tied to any one way of killing. And he also would go back and forth between killing couples to killing a woman alone. There were abductions. There were, you know, murder scenes that were in vehicles. There were murder scenes that were in homes. So it's, you know, he was more fluid and able to change what he did and liked to you know, play games with the cops from the beginning. What's interesting about, and there's a lot more to it than even what is in this book, because you can't, if you write a book that's in great, great detail about everything that you find, that's, because I'm one of those people that picks stuff apart piece by piece, and I look at everything in great detail. And some of the connections that he had, even in Riverside, there was the raceway there, and he had mechanical abilities. He just has a lot of the same kind of qualities that, and also the things he said were the same. And when he committed crimes, things he said to the victims. I mean, there are just so many things that were similar. There's more similar things about the two than there are differences. Just because,
what do you mean exactly?
Rape?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to, what do you mean exactly about what he said to the victims?
Well, for example, he was like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, like, everything will be okay. I just need your money or your car keys. I need to get to Mexico, or I need to get to Bakersfield, or different things he would say to the victims were identical, and make them think that he wasn't going to hurt them. The way he hogtied them, the same way, leave them on their bellies like that. Same thing. If you really study the Golden State Killer cases and you look at what the Zodiac did and how he treated his victims, what he said to them, it's really the same way. For example, even the things he wrote to the newspapers, one of the things he sent in, it said, "See you in the news!" exclamation point. And if you look at the Easter Egg Rapist, when he was running amok, he wrote "Excitement's Crave." They both wrote like poems to the news, and he said, "See you in the press or on TV." And there's just a lot of things that he said that were the same. And one of the things I thought would be a great forensic tool is to use the forensic linguistics to find out the letters that he wrote or the things that he has written over time, if you can prove through that if it's the same guy, like with grammatical patterns or just how he spoke. It's really cool evidence to try to solve it, you know, to use that kind of forensics. In addition to whatever else they can find, you know, because they haven't been successful in finding the DNA for the Zodiac.
You know, and me, again, me being coming from an amateur, I'm going to be like the listener here. Do you know or understand why then, when he was acting as the Zodiac, if he was, what was with the outfit and the name and that whole thing that came with Zodiac, as compared to how he was with Golden State? Like, that was quite a difference there.
Well, he still had his little outfit. I mean, he had in both cases, I mean, he'd right. just gotten out of, think about D'Angelo.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Just pretend that we know for a fact he was Zodiac. The reality is he gets out of the service, and just a few months later, in the San Francisco Bay Area, he's the Zodiac. And he has this outfit by the time he gets to Berryessa. And if you look at D'Angelo and what he did over time, he stole wigs, he used disguises, he also used every conceivable trick in the book, a mustache, no mustache, he gained weight, he lost weight, he used his left hand, he used his right hand. He did everything in the world to change whatever his description was. And that's really, you know, when he was starting off as Zodiac, he liked to, you know, I don't know if he was reading, what he was reading on the Navy ship or what he was doing, but he had plenty of time to prepare to do what he did from 1968, 69, and 70.
Hmm.
And he also knew when to move on.
Right. It just seemed more elaborate, that's all. It seemed more thought out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was younger. I mean, think about it. He was 23 versus when he was the other MOs and the other monikers, he was older. So he did change it up over time, and, you know, that's not surprising.
I just wonder if he's even going to live through this.
Me too.
Yeah, he looks pretty frail when they show him on TV, and I don't know if that's an act or not. Because
yeah, most of it seems to be an act. I saw Paul Holes, the Golden State Killer investigator, talking about how he thought it was an act and how they had just observed him riding a motorcycle and behaving perfectly normally. And then when he gets in court, all of a sudden he's turned into a, you know, rickety old man in a wheelchair and he's talking in a soft voice.
I think they probably medicated him, too.
Well, that's also
medicated
possible.
Him.
Oh, yeah,
because he hit his head. I think he banged his head on purpose when he was arrested on some wall or something. Mm. But, yeah, he's a lot thinner now, but that's a year and a half later now. And,
oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
What I was told a year ago was, because I asked the same thing, I said, do you think he's going to, you know, live to go to court? And they said that he is exercising in there. He's, you know, don't let his loss of weight, you know, fool you. The food's not that great in there. So he's probably pretty strong still.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that he turned out to be younger, so that he can be punished longer. And if he's not the Zodiac, and they do ever catch the Zodiac, I hope that he gets to spend some time in prison, too. So it's nice to see D'Angelo.
He might already be in there.
Yeah, but if it's not D'Angelo, I hope they catch Zodiac, too. But even if whatever
we do,
D'Angelo is obviously deserving of where he is right now, and I hope he gets to spend a long time there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, his mom was to be 87, so we could, you know.
So what do you think? What's your next move? You've got the book out, and you're starting to move forward. So what do you kind of got planned next? Where are you going to go with this now?
Well, like I said, I'm just trying to focus on trying to let the appropriate people look at some of the murders I have listed in the back of the book. There's a couple in particular that really I really piqued my interest. One of the things that Zodiac did, and also D'Angelo, in my opinion, and he also proved it, is he would call from a phone booth or somewhere close by the police station. And D'Angelo, he liked to sort of taunt police also. He did stuff right in the backyard of the Auburn Police Department. And one of the murders that happened was in 2003, where the young lady was left about a block away from the Auburn Police Department in the bushes off the sidewalk. And that was, you know, a long time after the Golden State Killer supposedly stopped. But he was still there in Auburn area, Auburn, Folsom. He lived right there in the attack zone, and there was nothing to stop him for all those years. There were a couple of murders in Granite Bay, Granite Springs, and also and they've never found the murderer, a couple of ladies that were teachers. So it's just sort of like, okay, what do you do with this information? What does this look like? And so you give it to the proper authorities, you know.
Hmm. So you think he did a lot more than what he's in jail for now, as well as Zodiac? You think he's sort of done a lot more murders?
I do. Hmm. One of the things that Zodiac warned everybody at the end, you know, after the Paul Stein murder, is he said, I'm not going to announce my kills anymore. They're going to look like accidents or you know, revenge, or, you know, he used every kind of way to kill, and he liked to start fires. And I've found evidence of that as well. So, as the Golden State Killer. And the day that he was arrested for shoplifting, or cited for shoplifting, I went looking for an article of some sort anywhere to see what kind of activity happened and what rage he might be in, because he was a cop. And he was arrested for shoplifting in the attack zones off of Greenback in 1979. So you look through the archives in 1979 around the area, and lo and behold, there's an article in that a house was burned to the ground in Penryn, California, which is right down the street, really, down the freeway from Auburn. And there had been items taken out of the house. They could tell after it was arsoned that there had been things stolen, and it was burned to the ground. And the thing that it was in the same town that Bonnie Caldwell's family lived, and it was on Caldwell Street. And so he liked to play games with names and with people. And so I'm pretty sure that he had something to do with that.
Wow.
So what do you now? When people pick up your book and they read it, what is the most important thing, or what is it that you hope they come away with after they've read the book?
Just to be open-minded, that one of the things that, you know, the serial killer term didn't even happen until the 70s, I think, is when it first showed up. And we've been learning about what they do and what they don't do. And what people do is, rather than having an open mind and thinking that a perpetrator like this can change or do something different over time, having an open mind is probably the best way to look at reading this information, and then saying, what do I think? What do I think? Does this, you know, I've made a case here, I've shown information and evidence and ties, and, you know, all kinds of information is in there. What do I think about this? And some people will walk away and go, nah, it's still, I don't believe it, it's not him, he's not the same guy. But then there are those who will go, oh, maybe it is. And the reality of it is, we need to find the answers. And that's really what people need to go away with is, you know, even no matter what he did or didn't do, whether he's Zodiac or Golden State Killer, and what he did during that time frame, the reality is that serial killers don't stop. They start and they never stop until they're incarcerated or dead. And so what happened in the case of D'Angelo, he started at the age of 15 to 18 years old in his criminal career, and he was not stopped for 58 years. How many other people did he kill? How many other people did he hurt? And what did he do over time? And if we can help families who have murdered family members or people who were harmed by him find answers, then what we'll get is maybe people who will feel a little bit more like law enforcement went all the way to the end to find the answers for them, because they deserve them. After all this time, they deserve to know who killed their family member. And their,
well, you can
their
count
parents
me.
Are dead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go. I was going to say, you can count me among those skeptics, but I also am open to the idea. I have no suspect and no vested interest in any particular suspect. I really don't care who the Zodiac turns out to be, as long as he's identified. So if someone comes up with a good theory with information, I'm certainly open to that.
Right. And the reality is that when I first showed up with my first edition of the book, my take on it was different than what other people had, and that was, you know, that he didn't live in the attack zone. I thought the geographical profile was wrong. I said, I don't think he lives there. I think he's in a different county. And so if somebody comes to the table with other, you know, an open mind and a different way of looking at things, maybe we can figure it out. And that's pretty much how I got to what if he's a Zodiac, because the reality is I think he is. And I, you know, I should say the alleged Zodiac killer, because, you know, that's what the evidence showed me. I can't fathom that, you know, that people can't or won't see it. So, but that's just because I have had my nose in this investigation for quite some time, along with other people that I worked with. and Dr. Sue Barrett was one of them, and then a gentleman named Polly that I tried to put his name on the cover. He said, no, I don't want to be in the cover. So I've credited him in the back of the book as he asked me to. So, there are other people who really think he could be the Zodiac as well.
And does that kind of scare you or make you feel okay? Like, do you have a fear from doing these kind of books and research?
Certainly. That would be why I use pen name. However, I was actually advised to use one. I started to write my first book with my own name and was told maybe that wasn't such a great idea since he was still out there somewhere. Well, now he's been locked up. And, you need to be careful who you talk to and what you do, but, justice is needed in these cases. And, of course, we all want to solve this case. We want to solve who these people were. Even if it's 50 years old, don't you want an answer? I do.
Yeah, well, we're recording this on October 10th, right? And tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of the Zodiac's last known murder. So I think that we're well overdue for some answers. And I also think that, when it comes to D'Angelo, one of the things that I'm really interested in hearing about, and maybe you could cast some light on this, but I know no one knows for sure what's going to happen, but he's obviously resisted confessing to this, and while he hasn't come right out and said, I didn't do it, he's certainly not cooperating. Do you think that it's, because obviously they have the evidence against him in the Golden State Killer case. The DNA, as you said, is, it's like what they said to BTK. There's really no way around that DNA. There's no explanation for why his DNA would be in a murder scene. So it's obvious that it's him, and he should know that if he's smart enough. So do you think that he, Zodiac or not, do you think that he is resisting confessing to this and maybe getting a lighter sentence, or, he's still going to spend a long time in prison, but do you think that's because he thinks he has a legitimate way of fighting this, or is it more about the psychology and the embarrassment? Some of the things that the Golden State Killer is accused of doing are so heinous. His behavior is so bizarre. There's even, ridicule of the size of his genitalia in the books that I've read. Do you think he's embarrassed about all this, and do you think that he'll ever admit to any of it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's embarrassed, really. I don't think he will ever admit to anything. I also think that he doesn't care. He doesn't care what people think of him. I think he feels that he had power and control, which he did. He terrorized communities for 58 years, and he was in charge of that. And so, no, I don't think he will admit to it. Not at all. And if he ever did, because they're seeking the death penalty.
But
that may take another who knows how many years to get to.
Because I always think there's a part of him that would want to gloat about it. That's just, that's what I think sometimes when you look at the way that he behaved, as he seemed so brazen, so reckless, he was so calling people and doing all kinds of crazy things. I wondered sometimes if there isn't a part of him that wants everybody to know that it's him and wants to revel in that. But at the same time, like you say, the death penalty is on the table. So even the slightest admission.
He's already gotten what he wants, which is he's recognized for all of the things that he did, and he got away with it for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so the stories that will be told and all the stuff that will continue to be said about him, he already has gotten what he wants. So whether he ever confesses or not, it doesn't really matter. But the reality is they have the DNA. So, no, I don't think he's embarrassed at all, because he had power and control, and he was in charge. And he really did, what's the word, bamboozle law enforcement and communities for his lifetime. Mm-hmm. And he was allowed to. He was allowed to be free all this time. And when you said that, all the brazen, horrible things he did it as every persona and every moniker that could be attached to this man. He did it. If he was the Zodiac, if he was the Golden State Killer, no matter, the Norwalk rapist, he did the same kinds of behaviors over and over, but he changed it up enough, and he went to different jurisdictions, and he knew that they wouldn't talk to each other. And that's how he was allowed to be free all these years.
One question. Do you think he had any assistance from any other people throughout this whole long span of killing and torturing and all the things he did to people?
That's a question that I won't answer because it's one of the things that law enforcement will have to let people know, I guess, if that's something they find. But no, I can't speak to that. I have opinions, but I can't do that.
Well, the Golden State Killer, in several cases, and you might know more about this than I would, Ann, but there are several instances where when he was in a house with victims and he was tying them up and assaulting them, where he made comments where he tried to make it seem like he was with someone else. He said, I had a buddy waiting for me out in the car, or acted like he was talking to another person. One victim, I think, even said that they heard what they thought were two different voices. He really tried to mislead people. And try to, right. Whether he was with someone or not, he certainly wanted to stew that confusion.
Right. Well, in my last book, one of the stories in there from Dr. Barrett is that a gentleman came into her home in 1983 and stood at the end of her bed and contemplated whether or not to do something. She was lucky because the perpetrator was scared off by a call to the police, and he left, but he did come back with another person. There were two people. Mm. So, you know, and I mentioned that in my first book also that you know, there were times when people described two people. But again, you know, that's, again, up to law enforcement to figure that out. But
And wasn't there one case where a guy caught him in a backyard and he put his hands up and then he called out to someone like, hey, they caught us or something like that? I seem to remember reading that in Michelle McNamara's book. Recently,
most likely, yeah. That's the kind of stuff he did. Yeah, he was pretty good about trying to confuse everybody. And one of the things in one of my last books was about an episode of Dexter, where you know, the criminalist named Dexter. He's the guy who's really the serial killer, right?
And kills other killers.
Right, and he's trying to confuse law enforcement when they're thinking that, you know, the Bayshore Butcher, I think it was what he was called. But he wrote a manifesto, like, you know, how the Unabomber wrote a manifesto, and different people, you know, have serial killers have written to
ETK.
Law enforcement and media. Yeah, and the reality is that one of the reasons they do that is to try to play games with you and you know, mess up the way you think. And in the Dexter episode, they said when that happens, you know, They realize that law enforcement knows that that's one of the things that can be done to confuse law enforcement. And so they go, gee, maybe he has law enforcement background, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is he's just trying to screw with everybody and trying to make them think something other than, you know, he's trying to make them think what he wants them to think.
And he knows so they have to check it out. He knows they have to go investigate it. So it takes up all their time and resources.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the thing with the bombs that the scares that he had with the Zodiac, I think that was completely bogus. And a lot of people will think that, you know, he was the Unabomber. But the reality is he really never did that. And he did, you know, D'Angelo did have some experience, I think, on his Navy ship with different types of things like that. So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that's coincidental or the same. If you read the book and find out the details of what I'm trying to convey, and I really did try to make it as simple as possible to show sort of a show and tell, here's what was found and here's what, you know, what was going on, and this is where D'Angelo was geographically and time-wise, then you can see the connection.
So now, do you have a website or a place that people can go and get information or find out about you?
Well, I do have just a blog that I have. It's just to post information about different crimes that have occurred, or DNA information and the things that are going on with the case over time. I've had it for a few years at MPen at WordPress. And then if anybody wants to reach me, they can send me an email at mpen13@gmail.com. But I do have a new Facebook page, but we're trying to work on things that were unsolved. But, yeah, mainly, like I said, I started doing this just to try to get some answers and to try to get over being so afraid of the ghost.
Fantastic. Well, what we're going to do is we'll have your book up on our website as well, so people that are listening live or in the on the app can just do one click and pick up the book. So, again, our guest has been Ann Penn, and the book is What If? Golden State Killer, Zodiac Solved. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.